Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Here we are.
All right. Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches. You all know who I am. Do you know who she is?
Oh, gosh. Don't make me say my name. Hello, everyone. We are so, so happy to be back in our studio / pool house / backdrop Malibu heaven.
Malibu, the OC, somewhere.
Somewhere,
but...
Somewhere out there.
This is season 2, episode 6, The Chrismica, that almost wasn't. Oh my gosh, I love this episode. This one just has it all.
It was fun. I had fun watching it.
It has drama, and it has the comedy to make sure that it doesn't get too serious.
Never too serious in the OC.
No, not with Seth around.
Yes, and it's our second Chrismica.
I know.
Yep.
Yeah, but it almost didn't happen. But you know what, guys? We have a really wonderful guest. And actually, this is one of my favorite storylines of the whole show. But our guest today is the hyper-talented triple threat actor, screenwriter, songwriter, Kathleen York. Kathleen played the mysterious Renee Wheeler, Lindsay's mother, on The OC. Her credits include TV shows such as The West Wing, Desperate Housewives, How to Get Away with Murder, In the Dark, and such films as Nightcrawler, Crash, and I Love You to Death. Just to name a few, you have no idea how many credits this woman has. Her song, In the Deep, was nominated for an Academy Award for the 2005 film Crash. She has 4 albums, I think, and there might be more. Correct me if I'm wrong. Her songs have been featured in multiple film and TV shows. And as a screenwriter, she's developed television projects for Sony, Warner Brothers, Fox, is an alumnus of the Showrunners Training Program. I love that. Welcome, Kathleen.
Welcome.
Hi.
Did I get anything wrong, or can I just, I mean, I could have just gone on and on and on looking at your resume.
It's so funny because all I, you know, how my brain works, but how the town is like, what have I done? Like, what have I done this week? You know, what's happening right now? Oh my God.
So how did you become an actress? How did you get an agent? I mean, a lot of things that we've learned on this show is that for young people out there, you know, we talked to writers, directors, actors, and since you have done so many things, you're so multifaceted, we love to share with the audience out there
how it happens.
Yeah.
I just remember, you know, I didn't have any connections, period. And that's really hard because when you do, it's a completely different landscape. Mm-hmm. So I just studied. I was in dialect classes and movement classes and training with some of what I thought were some of the best coaches. I did a student film at USC and I had, you know, I just kept submitting to agents. And
the old fashioned way, where you just send your headshot in.
Yeah. And then I, finally got a commercial agent, and the commercial agent had a one woman mm-hmm. office within it that did theatrical, and I submitted to her, and she's like, no. And so then I was doing this student film, and I did it. I forgot about it. And then this is the weird thing about how the things happen, right? And same thing, like, I'll tell you that story if you want to hear about, like, how I ended up getting nominated for an Oscar. Totally, like, left field. That's the thing, you plod along in a certain way. And so what I ended up doing this, a student film, I forgot about it. And then suddenly I get a call from this casting director's office out of nowhere saying, we were looking at the lead of that film, but we saw you in it. And we want to see you read for this film. And I ended up getting like 4 callbacks for the film. So then I called back that woman at that little satellite, you know, and I just said, I have 4 callbacks for this film. Like, will you rep me now? And suddenly there was a job. Wow. And as we know how often that's the case, then suddenly people become interested when you've kind of done all the work. And so then she repped me, and then I ended up getting some tiny little, you know, five and under to just, in, so I joined after, of course, which you can just join after. And then I got some little five and under role and something, and I was able to get my SAG card, and it was just like, oh my God. And then I just worked my ass off to just be the best actor I could be. So anyway, I just tried to be as good as I could, because I had people tell me right to my face, you know, you're not very pretty.
Really? Oh my God.
One of the first. So that little satellite agent, she went to a bigger agency. They wanted to meet me, and they just said, you know, you are not beautiful, and there's really not going to be much work for you.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
So she told me this, and I remember it was on Wilshire. I remember walking downstairs and putting my head against the wall of the building and crying. And this woman just tore me apart. And this was supposed to be my new agency, and I was all excited. And yeah, she said, you're not very beautiful, so just don't expect for much, you know, like much. We can maybe get you a couple of tiny roles. Cut to, I think it was like somebody had a broadcast camera, and I wrote it myself, directed it myself, and it was just me staring down the lens. I wrote a monologue that was just so intense that I knew I could deliver. And then suddenly I played this 16-year-old heroin addict and had the most intense monologue. And she's only like 48 hours sober, and I delivered. So I'm at that premiere, and some woman comes up to me, taps me on the shoulder, is like, oh my God, honey, you're so good. You were so good. Oh my God. Lori, you got to meet this young actress. It was the mother of that agent who told me was never going to be anything. So it was kind of full circle that the woman who told me you're never going to make it anywhere, she's at the premiere. Her mother is freaking out over the performance I did. And I have obviously agents of a better anyway. So it was one of those full circle things. And I just looked at her and I said, hi, Lori. And I just was gracious.
That was a sweet moment for you, you know?
Yes. It was the best. Oh my God.
I'm very excited to be here now. Beauty standards they're so fucked up anyway, but the diversity is what, you know, oftentimes it's like, sorry, you're not diverse enough, or, you know, you're too pretty. I mean, everyone gets something, or too pretty might mean that you suck. You know, you know, there's always someone more beautiful than you. And well, it's just the standards are silly.
It's such a fucked business, because a lot of it is about the outer. You know what I mean? Like, they're just assuming like, oh, well, you look a certain way, whatever way that is, and you can't play this role or you can't do this. And they put a lot of focus on external and physical, which is so fucked. Like, you have to have such a strong center, you know what I mean, to be in this business. And I think that obviously takes some experience, some work, age, everything. And Mindy, I know you and I have done a lot of work on ourselves, and we talk about therapy and whatever.
All that.
But like, it really takes strength and no ego to kind of, and that's tough as an actor.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? Ego is a huge part of it. But when you have those moments like you had, so gratifying to be like, fuck you, basically.
What it took for me to even be there, and what I had what I had gone through in the years prior to that was just like, wow, why was that necessary? You know, but I guess she felt like she was just telling me like it is.
I feel like some agents, when they say, you know, you're not beautiful, you'll never get anything, that's because maybe... Then
you think it's projection or something?
Not so much that. It's that then they're not looking for talent, and you don't want to be with them anyway. Yeah. You know, there are agents out there who are like, I'm sorry, you might look nice, but you are beautiful. I think you're a stunning woman. And I just think it's so bizarre that there's one standard of beauty, and it's so silly. There's what's the famous documentary of the casting director out of New York, and I'm not remembering her name.
She gave me my first job, Mary
Did
Doherty.
Did she? Mary Doherty.
She gave me first jobs.
Oh, with pulling people from the series, people from Broadway.
So good.
Back in the, you know,
Christopher 50s. Walken and like all the people that she, I think she discovered De Niro as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. And pulling people. And of course, there's always going to be these beautiful women, but or beautiful people in Hollywood. But there's still, like you say, character. I didn't know you consider yourself a character. I consider myself a character actor sometimes, and I prefer it.
Right?
I like to be a character actor. I don't like to have to play. I mean, Julie was a character. She may have been all kind of, you know, Real Housewives and yeah, but she was a character.
So, you know, what you said before, Kathleen, is you know, the woman who's made those comments to you didn't know what you were going through, what it took to be there. And I think that's really true in so many instances with people. You don't know, like, what's going on. Like, let's say you're at a restaurant and, you know, your server isn't very nice, but, like, we don't know what they're going through, or, like, road rage or whatever it is. And I just think it's an interesting point that people don't know people.
It's about compassion, right? I mean, yes. That's the golden rule, right?
So, you know, you've had a very successful music career as well. Was that something that was always with you as a child? You know, acting, music, is it something that you've kind of always known that you wanted to do?
Yeah. Yeah. I started, I started singing when I was young. I was Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz at the children's theater at the park. Mm-hmm. So I could sing. And then I started writing songs when I was 15.
Wow.
On the guitar. I learned how to play the guitar. And, it was really essential to me, and this I will go into some of my past, as my parents had died, and I didn't really have anything. It just felt like I didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. And so I had, but what I had was a really deep connection to being able to write songs. And that felt, sadly, like a reason to keep living. Mm-hmm. When everything else seemed confusing to me, I was like, if I can make something beautiful, then I'm going to keep existing. So that was the good news of it. The bad news down the road, as you see, is that you got to know that you're worthy of existing because you exist, not because you make anything. So mm-hmm. That's been sort of the journey, right? But so I started writing songs, and then I studied music. I went to, there was a little music conservatory that used to be part of what is now the AFI. And I studied theory and studied with some opera coaches and stuff, and still was playing the guitar. But I was trying to be in a band with people, but everyone was so flaky. Everyone was just not showing up. And so because I was also studying acting, I thought if I just focus on getting this career and this craft going, like, it's going to take all my focus. And so that's what I did. So then when that was kind of going along, I was able to then focus on my writing again. And then I got signed by Warner Chappell as a songwriter. And then the weird Oscar thing, I was working on an episode of a television show that I honestly was not really interested in. Audition when it came. I'm like, I don't want to do this. I gotta do some guest star role on something, you know. But I'd been working in the studio and writing it, producing it, singing. And so I was working on this television show guest starring, and the exec producer asked, you know, so what do you do? And I said, I'm also a musician. And so I brought him a CD the next day. And he then asked me to write all the songs for the series.
What series was that?
A show called Family Law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would write a song, an episode, and then I would play over, like, the montage would be one of, and it was really satisfying. One episode was about capital punishment. And I wrote this really haunting song with a friend of mine, just piano vocal. So that same person happened to be Paul Haggis. So then when Crash came along, I was already writing songs for his writing. So again, here I am, that I was chugging away as a songwriter and indie artist for fucking 15 years. And then because I do a guest star role on a TV show that I'm not even interested in doing, mm-hmm. even something wrong with the show, it just wasn't the role, all that just didn't excite me. And then because of doing that guest star role, I end up, you know, singing for half a billion people on the Oscars. It's like the way the world works. I used to try to control everything. And then I realized you can't control any of this.
Now, I seem to remember So I guess we would have been shooting this episode in the fall of 2004, and then Crash came out 2005, and then the Academy Awards are in the beginning of 2006. For some reason, I thought you were actually going to the Academy Awards while we were shooting. But I'm wrong about that timeline, right?
Yeah, I was working on the West Wing when I was doing your show.
Okay.
And then what was great is because I ran into Ben the night of the Oscars.
Oh.
And when we were doing the scene outside, which I cry every time I see it. Oh. I've seen it now twice to prep for this. And just that scene outside when, Rachel, when you know.
At the end.
It's just so like the lights go on. Like,
yeah.
You know, like you don't even. Oh. But I was sitting there with my little electronic auto harp writing a piece of music in between settings because I didn't really have much to do in that. You know, it was a pretty big scene, but I really had like a line. So I was writing. So Ben asked me what I was doing, and I said, oh, I'm writing a piece of music for something. So then he knew I was a musician when I ran into him the night of the Oscars at a party. He was like,
25 years ago, Carrie Bradshaw started posing a slew of honest, provocative, relatable questions to the modern woman in her fictional column, Sex and the City. And just like her, the singles and hopeless romantics of New York still want to know, can you change a man? What constitutes cheating? And can you be friends with your ex? I'm Tara Llewellyn. You may know me from Gilmore to Say, a Gilmore Girls podcast. And after 10 years of navigating dating, friendships, career shifts, heartbreak, and of course, love in New York as Carrie did, I couldn't help but wonder, how relevant is Carrie's column 25 years later? Join me as I revisit this beloved series with some of my favorite New Yorkers and closest friends as we commiserate on first dates, one-night stands, love lost, friendship breakups, and everything in between. To bring Carrie's column to life and answer her questions from each episode of Sex and the City through a modern lens in my new weekly podcast, And Just Like Her.
Was that- he was so sweet. He was like, you did it. You did it. What you got? I'm like, oh, thank you. He was so sweet. I had not seen him since that night. Like, so it was, I think it was like a year and a half or something, maybe 2 years, but it was really sweet.
Yeah.
He was really-
that is really cool.
I remember being like, That's Kathleen. She's on stage at the Oscars now. And your nickname, I don't know, where does Bird York come from?
Kathleen-y. My friends would say Kathleen-y, Leany Bird.
Leany Bird. Okay. So yeah, you're known as Bird York as a musician.
Yeah. And pretty much everybody calls me that. And also my screenwriting is under that. It just became like the thing. So
that's
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to actually get into the episode.
This is
a big episode. I don't know. I'm just going to read the synopsis real quick. The whole gang is invited to Chrismica at the Cohen's house, but Seth's favorite holiday is nearly ruined as secrets are revealed that will change the Cohen family forever. Jimmy and Julie are more than friendly, and Seth, Summer, Marissa, and Ryan make a plan to save Chrismica.
Chrismica!
It was directed by Tony Warmby. Written by good old Josh Schwartz. The original air date was December 16th, 2004.
Yes. Tony Womby. Do you remember our director? The lovely Tony Womby. Right before, though, do you remember auditioning or did they hand you the job?
No, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would have been lovely if they would have handed me the job. It was challenging because I was shadow directing on the West Wing under the amazing Alex Graves, who's gone on to just direct everything. He's so talented. So it was a really coveted position to be able to shadow director on, and so I was in the middle of that when I got this job. So I was like kind of torn because I was almost finished with I think it was 10 days of shadowing, but I was like, oh, take the job. Like come in. And I had known Ian from another job. Maybe I met Ian then, because then I worked with him again on Bones. Mm-hmm. Maybe I met Ian then. Anyway, he's so lovely. Ian
yes. Quinton. Yes. Yes. Yes.
He is the best.
And then strangely, I'm friends with Norman. The
Norman
editor.
Buckley. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I shadowed under him on the job in the dark that I've been on. So he and I have been friends for quite some time. Then he told me he was the editor of the OC, which I didn't know. It was lovely. It was easy. And then everybody just found everyone to be so delightful on the show. And Peter, like everyone was so So lovely.
Were you aware of the OC at the time?
Yes.
Being popular?
Yeah, because I had auditioned for the Kelly's role.
Oh, okay.
So I knew it because I read for the pilot. And what I thought the show was and what the show ended up being were two completely different things. It felt to me, and I heard you guys talking about that. I watched on one of your podcasts with Adam about how it just felt a bit more, just a little bit more of a straight soap in the pilot. Mm-hmm. And it became so much more than that. So I had kind of misread it.
Oh, I did too. I thought it was a flat out, straight up soap opera. And
glossy. Yeah, it was just in glossy. I was like, I don't think this is what's the right step for me. But I had a really lovely meeting with Josh.
So let's get into the episode, hey?
Yeah. It's a doozy.
It's a
sure.
doozy. So in the beginning, okay, I think it is funny though. It's a chilly OC morning. I think it's morning. And 50 degrees is chilly. And Caleb and Sandy are sitting there
on the pier.
On the pier. And of course, I'm looking at it going, okay, it's morning, but I'm sure this was shot for evening because the sun's over in this way. You know, just little details that I look at, but I have a feeling it was shot at dusk. But this whole time, this storyline's been going on. We've been talking about, we don't really stretch these storylines out on the OC. They're usually like done within one episode, right? And Sandy's just kind of over it. He's like, I don't know what to do. Caleb thought he wasn't going to jail. And now it looks like he may be going to jail. And he's like, and he's scared. He's more scared of Julie.
I'd be more scared of Julie than Kirsten for sure. Anyway. But yeah, like this whole secret and everything has been going on for a few episodes now involved with your character, Kathleen Renee Wheeler.
Who we found in the last episode, finally, that
they had an affair.
Yes, or that we finally found out when Lindsay said, Mom, what are you doing here? We pick up here kind of like what happened. Clearly, you guys just went, oh, I'm talking to Sandy. But nothing was revealed in the last episode.
No.
So nobody knows anything exactly yet. I mean, except for the audience. Now the audience knows. There we go.
We let the audience in on it. It's Chrismica time again.
It's an epic Coen opener with Seth at his best, talking about Chrismica and what's going to happen this Chrismica. It's kind of elaborate. I mean, it wouldn't be the OC without a Seth opener like this, right?
Well, yeah, he has a work wheel.
I had to hit pause on it and see what it actually said.
Yeah.
Interior decor, holiday spirit, food design, and security.
Security?
Yeah. Who do you think he
what
was
going to... What is that about?
I don't know.
I would like to know.
Text Josh.
So, you know, everything's in full swing. And he would like some more Jews present.
Because the ratio is off. I Googled Chrismica and there is so much merchandise out there.
For Chrismica.
And I think Josh is... kicked himself for not trademarking.
Yeah, because they did. There was someone who actually made the Yamaclaws, which we discover later in the episode, and sold them, and they never.
To this day, you can still get tons of them.
Anything for it. Yeah, that would have been probably a good idea on their part to.
Right.
And I love it because he says it. Adam's character says that, you know, about, he talks all about the marketing and like at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, and Josh wrote the script. So clearly. Yeah.
This is where I'm like, okay, I can tell when Josh writes the scripts. They're all wonderful scripts, but Josh has a certain flair and he gets in front of any comments that could be made. He's going to make them first as we're doing.
Yes, I noticed. I loved it. I just love when Ryan goes to the door and says, it's me, it's Ryan. And Kelly's character, I forgot her, that opens the door and he says, I want to talk about Lindsay and, you know, your family that does pretty well with taking in outsiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he delivers that line. I mean, I got to say the acting, everybody just did their job so beautifully. Like the comedy worked like exactly how the comedy worked and the drama totally worked like the drama needed to work. Like I can't say I've watched a ton of episodes of the show, but I obviously just watching this recently, just seeing the weight of it, like And when Kelly says, so she says, this is a family that takes in outsiders, and she opens the door and she looks at him. She goes, good line. You know, yeah. He's constantly commenting on his own writing in the most brilliant way.
Right. Well, but you bring up a point that I think is kind of the overall theme for this episode is that, yes, this is some really serious stuff going on. I mean, it's quite the situation, the Renee, the Lindsay, the Caleb, everything that happens. But Josh is making sure between the music and the comedy and the dialogue that we're not taking ourselves too seriously, people, you know, and Sandy going, it's okay, we'll work it out. So that being said, let's dive into it a little bit more.
Yeah. So, you know, Seth lets Ryan know that Marissa won't be at Christmas. So he suggests that Ryan invite Lindsay to the holiday.
Is that too early? What do you think?
Well, have they already had the conversation where she is like, I don't...
Nothing's happened.
Nothing's happened. I mean, I don't know.
My family was always open door. Like, you know, I was just at my family and my little nephew just brought his girlfriend over and she hugged everyone and it was fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
I don't think it's a big deal either. But the next scene, probably one of my favorites ever. We have Jimmy. We have Julie. We have Jimmy on Julie, Julie on Jimmy. So a sex scene, Miss Melinda Clark.
Okay, can you tell, like, I'm blushing?
I'm watching this. First of all, did you have pasties on? What was happening under the sheets? Did you guys, what was the protective wear?
Okay, so first of all, I don't think I ever did. I think this is the only sex scene that I ever did in the show. Except for the porn identity thing, which was like a joke. Uh-huh. But
you got to do it with Tate, which, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Not such a shabby deal there.
Well, my other husbands were, you know, Caleb and Mr. Michael Nouri and...
Yeah, like I said.
Bullet and...
You had a sex scene with Tate. So how was that?
Well, I don't know. I had to fast forward. For some reason,
I was like... You couldn't watch
it. I was cringing.
Kathleen, can you watch yourself like making out with men on screen?
For some reason, I was like, what? Yeah, this is...
It's hot.
This is Tate.
Oh my God, you guys look so hot.
I think there's one of those things where it was like, you get to know somebody. Tate and I are good friends and you get to know somebody and we're like, we get to go do this? Ha ha. It's fun. I don't think I don't know if there was pasties or not. For some reason, I don't think
You may have just been bare bosom.
Because there was some side boob or something.
I feel like it's...
Yeah.
You probably had something.
I don't think you
can actually be naked.
No, you're probably right. Well,
pasties...
The early 90s, you could be.
Are like basically these stickers that cover your nipples.
And wearing a thong. Yeah, so...
But what did Tate have on? Melinda's like nervous over here. She's rubbing the chair. She's getting red in the face. She's sweat. She's schwitzing.
Yeah. I don't, you know what? I have no recollection.
You blocked it out.
Like Rachel Bilson doesn't remember. I blocked it
out. Oh, you're pleading the Bilson. Okay.
You know what? It's interesting because we've never seen Jimmy and Julie like this. All of a sudden, they've gotten rid of their resentments. They're divorced. And now they're going hot and heavy. And she's like, is this adultery? Well, yeah, it's the definition of adultery.
You're cheating on your husband your ex-husband.
Yeah, but do you want to stop? She's like, no. But it's fun to see that. To me, it's watching Mindy and Tate, two friends, like having fun. Because we really just did have fun.
I love you guys together. Oh. I say it every time. You are together.
In the reboot, it's Jimmy and Julie are together. That loser. Watch what happens when he comes up in the next few episodes. But anyway.
It's a very fun scene.
Anyway, there we go.
I enjoyed it. Sandy meets with your character, Kathleen.
Yes.
Renee Wheeler.
On the pier.
On the pier. Do you remember, was that the Redondo Pier? It probably was.
Yes, it is.
I just remember one thing that Peter said. He's just such a sweetheart. You know, I've been doing this so long. Every time they say action, every time they say camera rolling, I get a little nervous.
Did he really?
Yes. And I just love that because it's kind of true, like to just never get blasé about a job like this, you know, where you're playing humanity at its peak, right? Because no one wants to watch a person just hanging out, scrolling on their phone or something.
Right.
I'm sure we've all worked on those jobs where you could tell the people have been doing that show too long and they've kind of half checked out, you know?
Yeah.
I just loved when he said that and it always stayed with me.
You know, and that's an interesting thing over the years. You never know when your adrenaline or your, I don't know if it's stage fright or nerves or whatever, but it's important as an artist to make friends with that feeling.
Yeah.
Because there's a reason for it. When you get adrenaline, your body gets hyper-focused, just like if it's, you know, fight or flight is, you know, the lion is chasing you. There's a reason you get adrenaline and hyper-focus. But that little feeling of like, zoom, here we go, can help you focus and give you that energy. But in that scene, I wanted to point out that this is the first time, you know, this whole time it's just been a little bit like, why won't you talk? Why won't you talk? And finally, Renee says, we get a little glimpse of what she's going through, that she's kept this from her daughter for this long. She's created this story and how difficult. I mean, you're as a mother to either fail or be scared as a mother, it's a terrible feeling.
Absolutely.
So,
well, and also he tells me that she'll be taken from me.
Yeah.
Oof.
Which is like, because I asked myself last night, I'm like, why would she go in the middle of a Christmas party? Christmas Eve.
The stakes are high.
Right. Because, yeah, I wondered the same thing for you to, you know, do that on Christmas Eve, but you're right. And I watching this as a mother myself, I have a daughter and I'm just like, what a fucked thing to deal with, come to terms with, thinking about how your daughter is going to react, like, you know, that you've lied essentially her entire life to her. I really like took this in as a mother, just thinking.
On Valentine's Day, 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at intohistory.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.
What a hard position. What a hard thing to play, too, as an actor. You know, I thought.
Yeah, just it seems like this has just been a slow burn on her for her whole, for the last 16 years.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Yeah, I mean, and looking at this, when we go into the next scene and Ryan's telling Lindsay about Chrismica, and then Lindsay feeling, that night on the bench in Newport, they must have gotten really close because now she's really being vulnerable and telling this story, one of the saddest Christmas stories or realities that I've ever heard. But all I could think was, wow, the story that her mother has told her has created this really sad girl who doesn't, that she and her mother don't celebrate Christmas. They don't do a Christmas tree. I mean, I'm sure it can be universal. The holidays can be very, very sad for people. But I started thinking and trying to imagine, like, what did Renee tell her daughter? Your dad's disappeared. He doesn't want you. Or whatever she did to protect her daughter has somehow created this whole world that's made this Lindsay very sad.
It comes off to me like, and I don't know, but that your character, that Renee, was very honest in all the ways she could be, because like she felt like it was the right thing to do. Now, this is just my theory. I don't know. But obviously not the whole truth, because the whole truth would be who her dad was. But to be honest enough that your dad isn't around. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's created this thing where she just wants her dad to show up. And it wasn't like, oh, your dad passed away or your dad,
Lisa,
you know.
At least she didn't do that, because that's pretty brutal.
Moving on, Marissa and Summer are at school. And conveniently, Zach, DJ, and Alex are all out of town because the writers needed to focus on the core four. That's the only reason for that. And but Seth approaches and he wants to bring their moods up and invites them to Chrismica. And they kind of say, okay, whatever. And he tells them that they're the color of putty. No, taupe. You know, on the color wheel of holiday spirit.
Oh, right.
So now they're invited because he assumes that Ryan isn't inviting Lindsay.
Right.
Quickly, Julie shows up and Kirsten questions Julie. She seems very frazzled, not frizzy.
Wonder why
but frazzled.
She's so frazzled.
Yeah. Do you remember ringtones?
Yeah. I had Curb Your Enthusiasm as my ringtone.
Did you
forever.
Really?
Get out!
Oh, yeah.
Yep, I was on that show.
You were?
Yes.
That's her crush.
Larry David is my ultimate celebrity crush.
Now, did you have to audition, just a side note, do you have to improv? You have to improv to audition, don't you? I've done that a couple times.
How was that? What was your experience like on that?
Bob Whitey, who is the director, an exec producer director, is a friend of mine. And so I initially was not wanting to do it because he called to say it's to play this masseuse in the thing that there's a happy ending for Larry David. And I was like, I don't really want to do that role. And he said, are you sure? And I had already established myself. I'd, you know, carried the whole miniseries. I'd started, you know what I mean? I had some kind of profile. And I'm like, you can get anyone to do that. And he goes, well, think about it over the weekend. If you come up with something that you think. And I'm like, oh my God, what if she is the ultimate granola hippie chick with whale sounds playing in the background? And so we went that. So, you know, I started talking about his chi, and it's best to balance the whole body, and that memories are stored in the body. And then, and he's finally, you know, Larry Davidson, I'm like, okay, would you like me to finish you? And so it became like, I thought that was actually kind of
right. Yeah, that is
to do that. So that is what I ended up doing. Then Bob Whitey said, you wait, all the things you've done. And at that time, the West Wing was a pretty hot show. And he said, all the things you've done, you watch, all people are going to think of you is as the masseuse and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like, no, I don't think so, Bob. Like, I'm glad you think so much of you and your show. And sure enough, I'm like been out places and someone goes, oh, I recognize you. And I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be, you know, a number of, and they always go, the masseuse. And then they give me this weird grin, you know, and I'm like, fuck, oh my gosh. So anyway.
That's awesome.
This is actually one of the, I guess you would call this the act one peak, because Seth says that Marissa and Summer are coming over and Ryan's upset that Seth invited her. He's already invited Lindsay and now they have an emergency on their hand. And Seth all of a sudden gets worried. He's like, oh my gosh, this is Chrismica's becoming too big. And Ryan's like, that's not really what the emergency is. So of course, Sandy's out there and he basically says that it's not cool for Lindsay to show up.
Right.
And Ryan just, it's so sweet. He's like, oh, okay, I'm sorry to impose. And they joke about it.
Yeah.
What is he, you know, what is she, the drug dealer or the illegitimate love child? And Sandy drops the tongs. You know, I just feel like Sandy's like dying to tell someone. Right? Because he can't, like.
I was actually surprised
that he didn't negate it or.
Right. And he tells the kids.
I was too. I had the same thought.
So for the purposes of the script and television and dramatic effect, I still loved it. I was like, oh, watching the scene, forgetting this had even happened, and the boys going, what? How did we guess this? And Sandy saying, this stays between us.
But the fact that he hadn't shared it with Kirsten yet, his wife, and he let the boys know, I felt that was a big no-no as a parent.
Yeah.
Sandy's been really compromised this whole storyline.
Yeah.
And like what to do, you know, and he certainly didn't have a good poker face then.
No.
And he's a lawyer and he should have a good poker face.
But also Seth didn't really react. Like, if this is Caleb's love child, that's your aunt, dude.
Lindsay's my aunt.
That is your aunt.
Yeah.
Probably younger than you.
But you know what? Like you wrote, huge bomb. And it's good. It makes for great television. The next morning. So this is my thought was, ooh, the next morning, Ryan's just getting ready. I'm going to go tell Lindsay she can't come. And I'm like, what about the fact that Caleb has a daughter and they aren't commenting on that?
Oh, yeah, they don't.
They don't really comment. Seth is like, okay. And they just talk about uninviting the girls. And my mind is like, it's such a big deal. But the next
Grandpa.
Scene, here's where Josh is saying, okay, guys. Meow, 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 meow. So telling us, it's funny. This isn't that dramatic.
It is. I loved how they used that. Cat,
that was good.
Whatever that is.
It's Carol of the Meows by Guster. It's an actual, yeah.
Guster,
sorry.
Yeah, it's very funny. because it is. This is huge drama going on. I mean, this is like the biggest bomb dropped.
Yeah.
Since Teresa was pregnant.
This is a bigger situation.
This is a bigger situation,
but
for sure.
But one of the absolutely most adorable scenes from Shannon Lucio.
Yes.
And we get to see her just with filled with the holiday spirit. And
it's so sweet. And she makes, what does she make?
The Yamaclaws.
So sweet.
I don't have one on.
No, we should have had them on.
I know.
She does pronounce it Yamaclaus in
Did
the
she?
First scene. Yeah. I noticed that.
Okay.
But it is written that way.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's supposed to rhyme Yamaclaus.
It is Yamaclaus.
Yamaclaus. But it's so cute and she makes it and she's so excited. And it seems like, I think, well, for Christmas for the first time in her life.
Yes. We keep saying this over these past few episodes. It's so nice to see Ben acting in some scenes where he's not, it's not so much drama. And he's smiling and they're truly having a good time together. And I've noticed that I think at the time, we talked about this with Shannon, at the time, the teenage audience were very anti-Lindsay. But watching it when you're older, you really actually see the wonderful appeal between the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love them together. Seth goes with Summer to pick out a Christmas tree because he wants to uninvite her.
Right. But I love how Summer, she's an expert on trees, but she calls the tree minty, not minty. Minty.
It smells minty.
Are trees minty?
Maybe there's minty undertones in the Douglas firs. I don't know.
Like a wine has minty.
Yeah, it has
minty
notes. She knows the notes of Christmas trees.
But then she's such a tease when she goes, mistletoe.
Uh-huh. And kisses him on the cheek.
Yeah.
She's very, very chipper.
I know. Oh, but you know what? I this is a good point. Summer's been real cranky for the past few episodes, fighting with Seth, and he gets, you know, in the school, she says, "Oh, I forgot about your holiday," and you, Summer was a little cranky, but here she's like, "You know what? I've got."
She's
the spirit.
Very into the Christmas spirit.
It's good to see that.
Yeah, I just love it. I just saw her as the spirit of the whole piece, of the whole episode.
She's,
I mean, obviously because she saves Christmas. But even through the whole thing, you're just sort of breezy and bouncy and adorable.
She's pretty up in this one.
Well, we also made the declaration that we think that Summer is she emerges as the moral epicenter of this season.
You have come up with this theory.
Well, because she does. She's like the, you know, Sandy was kind of that. But Summer ends up being that as this is your arc, the beginning of your arc of this intelligence and this really evolved woman compared to the pilot.
Well,
yeah,
sure.
It's happening, honey.
So Seth can't uninvite Summer. And then we learn next that Ryan couldn't uninvite Lindsay. I mean, how could he after the Yamaclaws? No. I mean,
when Ryan says that he couldn't invite Lindsay and
disinvite, you mean?
He couldn't uninvite Lindsay. And it's such a funny moment. And Seth's like, why? And he picks up the Yamaclaws, hands it, and he can't even look. And it's a thing of beauty. It's just this.
Yeah.
I
Seth's
was laughing.
Reaction to the Yamaclaws.
Yes.
He cannot even believe his Christmaka luck.
But of course, yes, that's when Marissa and Summer show up. And yes.
Yes. Jimmy shows up. Everyone's showing up. Julie.
The Grinch and Mrs. Grinch.
Caleb. Everyone comes. You're so ballsy. Julie kisses Jimmy in the kitchen with everyone else, like, in the next room.
And he's eating, like, orange chicken.
Yeah, and I'm thinking you're kissing, like, a greasy orange chicken mouth.
I mean,
carnal desire.
Well, that, I mean, that is, when you think about it, it's like she's not being careful at all.
No.
Sandy, Kirsten, and Caleb, they're right behind her, and she goes in, and I'm like, Kirsten just saw that. There's no way.
There's no way.
She didn't.
Well, she has to be on to you.
And would she be mad?
Oh.
Or would she expect it? I don't know.
Or would
know.
She be happy because you won't be with her dad anymore?
I don't know. But
I don't know.
Yeah, so
I don't
know
either.
Anyway.
Okay, so now Renee drops off Lindsay.
So sad.
I know. And you try to convince her to not go. You know, you're going to.
Yeah, because I'm going to be alone for Christmas.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of mean. I remember even that I'm like, wow, she's leaving her mom on Christmas? Like, yeah, we don't have a tree, but still, she's leaving her mom on Christmas.
Yeah.
I was just putting myself in Renee's shoes and I was like, it's got to feel, you know, when the wheels fall off and it's just in motion and you can't stop it. And she knows. She's putting on this face like, we could go see a double feature.
I know.
We could do the, okay, see ya. And she drives away and Lindsay walks in. There must be something going on. She's like, what do I do? Like, as a mother, you've lost all control. So you've got to do something.
But there's like that thing with being a mother, you always want your kid to be happy, right? So if it's something they really want, even though you're reluctant for many reasons, you're still supportive.
But I also think that, you know, again, going back to Sandy's landed it in my head, this could possibly be the last Christmas I have with my daughter
right.
for a while if I end up going to jail.
Right.
If I end up going to prison. So maybe that's what motivates her to like drive around the block four times
yeah,
and
right.
come back to the door.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
And the sooner that gets done, the sooner that's revealed, the quicker all the, obviously the legal situation will heal itself and mm-hmm. take that off the
yeah.
table, obviously.
Well,
yeah.
And I think Caleb has the same idea. I mean, Sandy's been hammering at him since last season to come clean. And he finally says he's going to tell the truth, which, by the way, this is the first time we're seeing the new part of the renovated house. But if you didn't know that was the reestablished or the brand new construction, that's on a side note. It's that new room.
Right.
Caleb's saying, I'm going to tell her. And Sandy's saying, boy, you've got timing. But there really is no good time to ever say this.
No.
Ever. But of course, it makes for good television that everybody's going to be there. And
right. And just on, you know, that note, Renee rings the doorbell.
Yep.
And you want to talk to Kirsten. Dun, dun, dun.
I want to talk to you. And Kirsten says, okay, let's have a glass of wine. And Caleb walking in. I love how it's Renee, Caleb, mom, Lindsay. Of course, you know she's there. But those are some classic OC.
It was so well done. I mean, that could have gone wrong 1,000 ways.
Right?
It could have been campy. It could have been, you know, we've all seen soap operas, you know, daytime where they don't handle it well. Mm-hmm. It was just so perfectly done.
Right.
You know, I just think the acting and the writing and the editing was just, the tension built just right. And I never felt like I was being manipulated or that it was becoming sentimental or soap opera.
Right.
Like it just flowed. I thought it really flowed beautifully.
Yeah. And I just, you know, everybody's there.
Just like in Thanksgiving when we had a big scene like that.
Right. Everyone's there and the huge bomb is dropped in front of everyone.
Well, he doesn't actually say it.
And no, he doesn't have to.
And he says, I made an error in judgment that could have ruined my marriage. And mm-hmm. and poor Lindsay says, oh my gosh, you're my father.
Mm-hmm.
And so Lindsay runs off and then Renee has to run off after her. And Caleb walks up to Kirsten and I don't know what to say. Whack.
Yeah, she really gave him one. But then he goes to you like, you're not going to have a problem with it. He just like goes to talk to you. And then Julie's slapping Caleb.
Even
I laughed
harder.
Out loud. Yeah, I laughed out loud. That was
and
a,
she goes,
that was a
you
good
should
one.
Be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think everybody, even I was like, why is Julie mad?
I know.
And Jimmy says, I'll go take care of your mother. And then
to Marissa. Yeah.
Yeah. And then everyone runs away and mm-hmm. it's left with Summer and Marissa sitting there. But it's like, it's so fascinating that and then of course, here we go. Kirsten has this huge reaction. My first thought was, is everyone overreacting? Is it possible? Or you can never tell anyone how to feel, but Kirsten goes like, she goes to the moon and back. She's like, how dare you do this to mom? How dare you do this to me? And throwing the vase. And all I could think was, there's a lot more going on here. It's not about what she just heard. This goes back to her. This defines her entire relationship with Caleb. And we only get little snippets of it. And it's left up to the audience to make that decision. Because there's a lot of that she talks about that she's only indicated in the past.
Right. I mean, that is a pretty big thing, though. You've had a sister you didn't know about for...
Yeah.
16 years.
Well, not only that, but just knowing your mom was cheated
right.
on, that's a pretty awful, awful thing.
Yeah.
Whoever wants to see their mom get hurt?
No.
Then I put myself in Lindsay's place of my mom told me a story. Is the painful thing that Caleb is my dad, or is it that my mom lied all these years? Or that my dad lied, or it's that two people. No, and then this, I wanted to bring this up. Caleb really had Renee in, like you said, almost a prison. Like why she chose, like I'm going to continue to pay money in a trust, which I would assume a trust is essentially for the child, but I'm going to maintain this money, these payments, but you have to go along with what I want.
Mm-hmm.
You think Caleb was dictating what the parameters of this trust were. And I don't know what choices you made as an actor, but it just, that's what, how I filled it in.
I don't remember. All I remember is just the, you know, being on the other end of her finding out how I betrayed
right.
her.
Yeah.
Just then seeing when I watched the scene, I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. I was in a lot of pain. And then like, it's all over my face, like how painful it is to hurt again, just like I said, who wants to see their mom get hurt? And then alternately, who wants to see their kid
Oof.
Get hurt and know that you've basically just seared your child's sense of reality
mm-hmm. and awful, safety basically. And unexpected
and trust.
Yeah.
How could she ever trust me again after that?
But and you played it so beautifully.
Yeah.
It's like it came out. It wasn't what Renee wants to talk to Kirsten. And then when Lindsay comes in, she said, can we do this private? Oh shoot. I got to get out of here. She second guesses. And then it happens. And it was, the pain was definitely communicated to the audience. So
mm-hmm. absolutely. So, you know, as we continue, Ryan goes to check on Lindsay and...
He won't let her alone.
He won't let her alone, no. But she's a wreck and she breaks up with him. She's not going to want to be
right.
near the family at all, understandably.
It was sweet. He said, I just want you to know I'm here for you. Which is in any situation that's devastating, that's all anybody really needs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I can't fix it. I can't change it, but I'm here for you. So it was a lovely gesture.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see that Shannon was so upset and there was so much real raw emotion there. Sometimes I could see it, as an actor, sometimes when you get that deep, it's like, it was almost like I really bought that. I can't even talk to you right now. I'm so upset.
Mm-hmm.
I just loved it. Yeah. What was interesting about it is that she was so upset she could barely talk.
Yeah.
And she had to get, you know, the character needed to communicate, but also the actress needed to get the lines
right.
out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she, and what was interesting is she was so upset that her voice got really high.
Yeah.
And it was, she became like a child.
Absolutely.
You know, I can't, and you just saw that everything she was trying to protect, like she became this little, mm-hmm. her voice sounded like she was seven or something.
Yeah.
It was really, really touching.
Yeah.
And then of course, because we both all love Shannon so much, like just to rewatch it and knowing her life and watching her, you know, it just hurt. You're like, no, I don't want Shannon to hurt.
Yeah.
It's right.
And of course she's Lindsay, but I'm like, no, Shannon.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely.
I do have to say, here's something just really quick going when Kirsten's crying and she locks herself in. Sandy, who's been dealing with this information and processing it for a way much longer time than anybody. And he goes, well, work it out. And that's an interesting perception of the world. Everything is, it's okay. We're going to be okay. We will work it out. And she's like, I'm mad right now. Just let me have my moment, you know? So of course, everything's going to be okay, but she's got to live with it for a little bit. But I'm glad that we have that voice of Sandy saying, it'll be fine.
The Sandy voice. So at, you know, everything's gone to shit, so to speak. But once we're at the diner with Seth and Summer and Marissa and Ryan, you know, Seth's convinced Christmas is canceled. And Summer, of course, is like,
she's the sweetest thing. She's like, well, because even Seth goes, okay, Tiny Tim. She's like, Chris, but then she kicks him under the table.
Well, of course.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's, she's like, and I have a plan.
Right. Yes. And the plan, they have to borrow things from Jimmy's boat.
Well, that's so funny.
Yes, it is funny.
Especially because they ask for an extension cord and a generator. And then Jimmy goes, yeah, it's around the corner.
Yeah. So, yeah.
He doesn't help her.
No, he doesn't. You go grab that generator real quick.
Because I'm guarding the door.
Because who's beneath? Who's below deck? Julie Cooper herself.
Well, she's convinced herself. Here. Okay, so here's the thing about Julie. The way she's behaving is, you know, when we saw her in Marissa's room and Caleb says, I need you to forgive mm-hmm. me. And she's like, I don't know. I'm not going to forgive you. Why is it such a big deal? Well, it's because deep down, she's like, first of all, we could put the focus on Caleb. And now she's actually envisioning leaving Caleb.
Right.
She wants to be with Jimmy.
Well, like you said this earlier, Kathleen, you know, where Julie says, I want to be with you.
Yeah.
And you love Jimmy.
I want to be with you.
Yeah, like, you love Jimmy, I've decided.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We've seen that. They've definitely... And now she's fallen back in love and realized, I mean, there's not chemistry between Caleb and Julie, but yeah, there's chemistry there.
So I love this next scene with Lindsay and Seth. So Lindsay's on the beach and Seth goes to find her and he's being really cute with her.
Thank goodness for this scene. I think this is one of the best scenes. And the fact that he goes to see Aunt Lindsay and it's, and she flat out says, you know, he's like, you know, really in the big scheme of things, it's not that big of a deal. She's like, yeah.
It's a huge deal.
It's a pretty big deal. But he does exactly what we're talking about. That the life lesson is no matter what doesn't kill us, you know, makes us better. And he's there to say, oh no, we comment on everything. We make humor for everything.
My favorite thing is that he brings her a Cohen stocking to be part of the family with the wrong name on it.
Laura,
because that's the last one they had at the store. I laughed out loud.
But I also love Seth being genuine and maintaining his humor at mm-hmm. the same time.
Yes, it's his way. He's our Chandler Bing of the show.
Right,
does everything through humor.
One of the things that I was going to say about the scene that you were talking about when Ryan does say the right thing to Kirsten to get her out, this is a good comparison to Julie and Kirsten. It works on her because ultimately she's not a selfish person. When he says the one thing that can get her to say, he's like, I'm worried about Lindsay. And she says, oh yeah, let's not think about myself right now. Whereas Julie is so selfish that it's all about her.
Mm-hmm.
So that he knew exactly, he knew at her core. Whenever a human being is having a difficult time, I tend to give myself to somebody else so that I don't have to think about my own shit. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very like, let me think about my daughter. Let me think about like, yeah. So he knows exactly what to say.
Kelly was so good in that.
Yeah.
She was so good in that.
Agreed.
We tend to do a lot of spoilers, but it's starting, we're starting to see what's going to start happening with Kirsten in this next season, that there's a lot going on underneath the surface and she's the best actress for this role. I love it.
Now we come to Seth and Lindsay.
Walking down the street.
Yep. Towards Lindsay and Renee's house to find the house completely like Griswold decorated.
That they did in a few hours.
That they did in like an hour. Yeah. With Summer's generator. How she got that tree. Whatever. No questions.
They were they were drinking coffee at the diner. So
yeah. a lot of motivation. It's completely decorated. Maybe This Christmas by Ron Sexsmith plays. I mean, instantly when that song started, it took me back to that night filming that scene.
Yeah. Do you guys have memories?
I remember being there. I do. And like, you know, just that feeling. It was a feeling with all the Christmas decorations.
Yeah. By the way, that house is a Craftsman house in Pasadena, a beautiful, beautiful area of LA. Very expensive, by the way. And Julie makes fun of the house at some point in a future episode. But it's, I remember shooting in there.
So, yeah, and you have a moment, you know, where you say something to Sandy about hoping that Lindsay will forgive you. That Renee says to Sandy. And that was where I really was like, fuck, man, to be a mom. And it's a big thing, you know, how it scares me because I think about in the future when my daughter's a teenager and she finds out that I lied about Santa.
Oh,
an Elf on the Shelf. Spoiler alert.
Oh, my gosh. My daughter my daughter found her Santa letters that I put up really high when she was young. And then at some
point. How old was she when she found them?
She was that one who believed that. She's like, if I stop believing, he won't be real. Like, she really believed in that. She's forgiven me now, but it was tough.
I'm scared of that. I'm not going to lie. But anyway, it's a beautiful scene at the end. And I love seeing everyone together. And that when Kirsten and Lindsay meet each other and hug.
And she says, hi, I'm Kirsten now with a different way and different meaning. But what a great line and delivery. This is really weird.
Yeah, Shannon was so great. In that moment. But it was beautiful in the ending to this episode. There's a lot there. And Seth with his improvs. And not to give Summer a latke because it gives her gas. I laughed. Adam.
What? This episode, I actually did watch. I watch with subtitles now because there are so many things that you miss, especially with the Seth character. If I could recommend, I'm sure you all watch the episodes, but watch with subtitles. You may miss some things. There's some great, great dialogue. Josh did a great episode on this one. And
yeah, everyone did
great. It was so much fun.
Kathleen, you're so wonderful as Renee and took on such a beast of a storyline.
Well, the beast, it was that scene, the reveal scene was the beast of all scenes. There were 11 POVs on that, right? I just remember the kitchen scene going on forever. And I remember you guys had a rule, which wasn't on any other set I'd been on before, that if your cell phone went off during a shot, you had to put $50 in a bucket.
Oh, yeah.
Is that
in a jar.
I was going to say $20, but
it was 50.
Was it 50?
I was like, man, that's steep. Yeah, but I remember that scene was endless scene.
Endless.
So that's the tension that people are watching that happens in that scene. What they don't realize is that we were holding that tension for like 6 hours or something. You know, like you shoot again. Now you put the camera there and get their reaction. Everyone's staying in this hyper like tense place.
Absolutely.
A scene like that, when everyone is in the same room, it's rare that we're all in the same room together. I remember Alan Dale, I remember off screen, we were just joking around and everyone was just in a really good mood. And usually that happens for about the first couple hours. And then by the end, we're all like, okay, now we're doing it over and over again. But there was one funny moment that I didn't make a point of when we were talking about it, that somebody says, what the hell is going on? Or what's going on? And Jimmy and Julie come back from a quickie and she goes, what's going on? I'm like, they both have this like smile on their face. They just got away with it. And it's like, what did I walk into?
You know what I noticed in the credits? Alan Dale, was he a regular?
Yeah. He became a regular in this season.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, those scenes with everyone in it and particularly like Summer and Marissa are just in the background like,
It was an easy episode for you guys.
Oh, I loved those scenes. Yeah. Are you kidding? The ones with everyone in and there was so much dialogue and you had to shoot it so much. And I was just
everyone
standing in
talking.
The background. I'm like, I'm good.
I did notice you had a reaction during right your POV or your face is right over Shannon's shoulder.
Uh-oh.
And between and right out of focus, your face is like, whoop. Zoiks, Scoobs,
dropped
what's going
a doozy,
on?
Dropped a doozy.
Anyway, that was the Christmaka that almost wasn't. And to this day, people are celebrating it everywhere.
Christmaka.
Yes. But we have some voicemails for you.
We have some voicemails for Kathleen, if you don't mind hanging around to hear them.
Hi, Kathleen. It's Hannah Garner here in West Virginia. I'm just curious what your experience was on the show as far as coming into a show that had such a huge fan base and huge ratings every single week. Did you find yourself getting recognized more in public for your role on the OC? And what was your overall experience? Was it, you know, overwhelming or was it exciting? Thank you. And then to Rachel and Melinda, I just wanted to thank you both so much for doing this podcast and taking the time to revisit these episodes each week. I know I look forward to it. The OC is my favorite show of all time. I've rewatched it no less than 10 times total. So love it. And it's really nice, you know, having you all go through it and get some behind the scenes information that maybe we weren't aware of before. So thank you guys so much.
Aww.
Have a good day.
Oh, I love
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Anna.
Hi.
Okay. So, it was an absolute joy to work on the show and primarily because of the cast. Everyone was just so lovely, every single person. And my first scenes were with Peter, and Peter just couldn't have been more welcoming and kind. And it's always awkward to be on a show that's already established because the it's almost like, you know, walking into a high school where all the groups have already, from the crew to the actors. So it was nothing but a great experience. And again, Shannon and I became friends and still are. I think I got recognized once at O'Hare Airport. I was on the West Wing then, and that had a huge, so mostly that's where a lot of the recognition or people looking at my face going, don't we take yoga together? You know how that happens. And, you know, people can't place where they know your face. So they start guessing that they must know you from a group of friends. And you're quietly kind of going, do you watch this TV show? Because I think maybe that's because I don't know you, you know. So I didn't really get recognized much on the show. And I didn't have that much to do on the show. I was there to do, you know, it's a painting, right? It's a tapestry, and I needed to be the green weave. That, well, actually the red, right? Because it was, and I needed to just add my color to it and do it as humbly and simply as I could. And because the show was so magical and fun and a hybrid that I don't think anyone had ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what made the show so special and endearing. And it's all because of what you guys did. It is, like I said, we both had read the pilot. It was a very well constructed pilot, but it wasn't what the show ended up being. And right. Between the cast and Josh and when the writers, like, what you guys spun some real unique magic, and congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks.
Glad you were a part of it.
Well, Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time and talking with us.
Thank you for inviting me. And, I hope to see you guys out in the world in person so I can see you properly and say hi.
It's been lovely to reconnect. And
absolutely.
Thank you so much for taking the time. And I loved your character.
Bye. Bye.
Close your eyes. It's time to discover what starting and growing your own business feels like. Whether your business is bedsheets or skincare, Shopify's with you every step of the way. Now, open your eyes. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I'm a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, Yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh
and I'm Robbie
Chaudhry. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.